It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. It's Sunday morning. Good morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning for your calls, your questions, 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. And, you know, I want to start out today. I was going to talk about, I launched a video this week. We do videos on YouTube that, you know, YouTube is pretty fascinating place. It's a fascinating place in a lot of ways. And we just had the 60 Minutes had the CEO of YouTube on this past weekend, and just really, it was interesting to hear just how relevant and just widespread YouTube is becoming. I have always thought, as a parent, you know, YouTube is for little kids that just want to watch other people play video games. And that's what, if you go back a couple of years, that's what I saw my own kids doing. Like, what are you guys doing? You're watching YouTube and you're watching other people play video games? I mean, just unbelievable. And thinking of it, this is just for kids and dumb skateboard tricks and people falling down steps. And the reality is that YouTube has become a medium that is, it's a dominant medium in America. And something like 60% of folks would rather watch YouTube and watch videos on YouTube than watch traditional television. So the numbers on YouTube are really kind of just, they're mind-blowing numbers. And I guess I bring that up to say that one of the things that the CEO of YouTube said is that it's becoming an educational platform for everyone, including baby boomers. And you think of somebody who's 60, do you really, is that the first place you think about going? Well, increasingly the answer is yes. More and more people look to YouTube. Really, in searches, second only behind Google, depending on how you look at the data, there's a tremendous amount of online, there's a tremendous amount of searches going on in all demographics, all age groups. And I've been using YouTube and posting financial videos for a lot of years, but it's only been the last year. I think we had 500,000 views in 2018, which becomes that's a real medium. It's a lot of views, surprising to me. And then we've had over 1 million views this year on the YouTube channel as well. And it's just, it's incredible to me, but I guess to some extent it's we're used to, and we trust there's a validity to YouTube. And YouTube's algorithm effectively brings things to the top that are evidently trusted and make sense and helpful. And that's exactly what's happening when it comes to the experience I've had with YouTube. So should I take a lump sum or monthly pension payment? Should I take a monthly lump sum or should I take a lump sum or monthly pension payment? I just posted to YouTube, I think Thursday morning. There's 4,000 views. As I'm sitting here getting ready for the show, I just got an email from someone from YouTube, literally 8 minutes ago. Hey, Wes, thanks for your video on pension lump sum and the 6% test. It would have been helpful to see this 3 to 4 years ago. I'm sorry, I just learned about YouTube a couple of years ago. But anyway, this was from Ron in, and it doesn't say where Ron was from. But anyway, I was going to talk about that very thing today. I want to talk about there are 100,000 ex-employees of General Electric that will face a choice very soon: stay in the company's pension plan or accept a lump sum and cut ties. Just take a monthly amount or get a big chunk of money and then create your own pension. Who else has done this? I've seen it from FedEx. I've seen it from Verizon. I've seen it from General Motors. I've seen tons of folks here in Atlanta from Ford, Coca-Cola. And these are scenarios I've seen all year long when it comes to, hey, do I have a pension or not? Or should I take a big chunk of money from my employer or just a monthly amount for the rest of my life? Now, if you're young and you're listening and you're, let's say you're 32 or 28, don't tune me out just because I'm bringing up a foreign word to you. Because if you're 28, you don't have a pension. you haven't heard of it, or you maybe you've heard of it. Only old people get pensions, and to some extent, pensions have gone away for new folks. If you're new in the labor force and you're 32, very unlikely that you have a pension. Some companies still do that, but even most companies that had pension plans cut them off so that new people can't participate. They didn't cut out people that were participating, but they said no more for new employees. But even if you're young, don't tune this out. If you're 30 and you have zero pension hopes, this is something that your parents will likely have to struggle with. And very likely your grandparents had something, have a pension or had a pension decision to make at some point. And that impacts your family planning. Even just because you don't have a pension doesn't mean somebody in your family doesn't have a pension. It may mean something to do with your inheritance. It may have something to do with your overall family wealth or your legacy. And if you have to take care of your parents, like so many of us in America, in retirement, it matters. So to understand and get educated around pensions, it impacts a lot more folks than just the people that are making that lump sum versus pension decision. So even if you're under the age of 50 and you have no pension personally, still I want you to tune into Money Matters today. I want you to listen today. I'm going to give some examples on what's a better deal, to take a big chunk of money or let the company just pay you for the rest of your life or the rest of your life along with your spouse. Before we're going to do that, I want to talk about something even more headline-oriented or more relevant that impacts markets, and that has to do with the election and the stock market. So we're going to get back to pensions here, but I want to first talk about some new research that I've read just this past week that I want to share. And I'm looking on this morning, Predictit, which is a website that really kind of owns the market, owns the betting market behind political outcomes. So if you want to wager money on who's going to win an election or if the president will be impeached, well, there's a betting pool for that. Will the president actually be impeached and out of office before his term? There's a betting pool for that. Who's going to win the Democratic primary? There's a pool for that. Who's going to win the general election? There's a pool for that. And because people are betting their own money, it's actually a very, very relevant tool to forecast what people are feeling, and they're voting with their wallet. So it's real. There's emotion tied to it, because if you're betting on political outcomes, you're pulling for your home team, of course, but there's still real money behind it. So the results it predicted, which is effectively a forum to wager real money, is a very interesting tool to look at on who's going to win election. And this is, I think, in this coming election in 2020, maybe more relevant than we've ever seen. And I feel like I've said that every 4 years. This is the most relevant election of our lives. And maybe that's just that we're in the moment, but I think it'd be hard to argue that this wasn't at least as important, or there's as much fervor around Trump versus whoever is going to be the Democratic nominee than there has ever been in the history of presidential elections. Right, the world's bigger. There's more headlines. It's a world that is arguably more polarized than ever. So there's a lot behind this. And we talked a couple of weeks ago on Money Matters. Paul Tudor Jones, the famous hedge fund operator, said that, oh, we've got a traffic alert. Ooh, well, we're going to do a quick traffic alert. When we get back, we're talking about what predicts with 87% accuracy who will win the presidential election. If that's not a cliffhanger, I don't know what is. Let's go right to a red alert. Well, we're back, and that was the cliffhanger. Let's go to those statistics here. Okay, S&P 500 is what we're looking at, has predicted, so it's really the market itself has predicted presidential outcome or presidential winner, election winner, 87% of the time, going all the way back to 1928. Talk about an indicator that is worthy of paying attention to. There's predicted, there's so many, you go to Real Clear Politics, you go to Politico, you're going to find almost an endless amount of, or dozens and dozens of different polls, right? But how important are those polls when you can look at an indicator like this? S&P 500 was higher in the 3 months before the election, Okay, that's if. So if we look at markets, we look at the election next November. So we look at the market in August, September, October. So 3 months prior, August, September, October. If the market's higher those 3 months prior to the election, the incumbent party has won. And if stocks were lower in those in that three month period, the opposition party wins. That's with 87% accuracy. So that's been true in every single presidential election since 1984. And so 100% accuracy on this indicator since 1984. 100%. 87% accuracy since 1928. So you've got to look back. If you go all the way back to the election in 1956, 3 months prior to the election, market was down about 3%. Not a ton. Incumbent party 1950, where am I looking here? 1960. 1960 election, 3 months prior to the election, market down only 1%. Down just 1%, incumbent party lost. 1972, market up 7%, 3 months prior to the election, incumbent party won. See the pattern? 1980. 1984, the market up 5% right before the election. Incumbent party wins. This happens over and over and over. It worked in 1928, 1932, 1936, 1940, 1944. I mean, the list goes on and on. Again, ever since 1987, it's a perfect record. 88, 92, 96, 2000, 04, 08, 12, 16. So as we go into this election, when do we want to really start to pay attention to markets and what they're telling us? Well, August of this coming summer. It really starts to matter what the S&P 500 is doing and what it's telling us about the upcoming election. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about politics. And I want to talk about the recession indicators that lead up to elections as well and what that means for the election. And, of course, we'll get to lump sum, big chunk of money to put in an IRA to create your own pension or take a quote almost guaranteed, at least from the company's perspective, for the rest of your life, which is a better deal. You're tuned into Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters as we talk about the election odds, because obviously this election might have something major to do with the stock market. It was Paul Tudor Jones a couple weeks ago, a famous hedge fund manager, says that if Trump wins, market up 15%. If Warren wins, market down 25%. That's a 40% variability between these two outcomes in a $22 trillion asset, which is the United States stock market. So a very big deal. Who knows? We don't know if we'll never know. But it obviously has a major impact. If you go to predict it, the way the odds are now, and these are betting odds, so this is actual money behind these thoughts that Trump will win. It's a 45% chance. And then you actually have to take out all the other candidates, Biden, Sanders, Buttigieg, Warren, Bloomberg, down the list, to add up all of their percentages to say Trump, because he's the nominee, he will obviously be the Republican nominee, and then you've got all these other folks still in the field of Democrats. So then if you look at another predicted who will win the presidential election in 2020, the betting odds are 54% for the Democratic Party to win, 48% for the Republican Party to win. Those are, at least today, are the betting odds. We're a long way off, and I just talked about an indicator that really matters, and that's what the market does 3 months prior. Total return to the S&P 500 prior to the election predicts with 100% accuracy since 1984 and 87% accuracy since 1928. Market up, incumbent wins, market down, those prior 3 months, incumbent loses. Now, recessions, that's another thought. Every president who avoided a recession 2 years before his reelection went on to win reelection. So again, and this makes obviously a ton of sense. We talk about two dozen different issues every time the election rolls around. In the end, we know that Americans, for the most part, weigh their wallet. They vote for their wallet. So it is so much about the economy, despite all the other coverage. And there's very interesting statistics around that. So there's only been one president in the history of elections who had a recession in the 2 years prior to the re-election that went on to get re-elected. So Bush won, recession, yes, not re-elected. Carter, recession, yes, not re-elected. Ford, yep, there was a recession, and guess what? Didn't get re-elected. Same thing happened to Hoover. Same thing happened to Taft. Recession, didn't get re-elected. Go down the list of no recessions, Obama, Bush 2, Clinton, Reagan, Nixon, LBJ, no recession, re-elected, yes. So that's obviously the next piece of the equation. We just had a blowout jobs report, more than 200,000 jobs created for the month of November. We'll talk about that when we get back. And lump sum versus pension. Stay tuned. More Money Matters right here on WSB. Straight ahead.
WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. We've got another half an hour with you. And Ryan Ely and I are here just talking through what we're about to talk about here on the air. I've got church right after this, so I'm dressed up in a suit, ready to run out of here. I've got one of my children. Poor Jake today. He doesn't know it. He's so excited that he has a basketball game. And he knows the dates of different things. So he's like, today is the 7th, right? No, it's the 8th. Today's the 8th, and I know that on the 8th I have a basketball game, and I'm really excited about it. What he doesn't know is that he has to go to church instead and do like a Christmas musical program. So I'm sitting there thinking, like, do I just lie to him and tell him that the basketball game is canceled? Or do I tell him it's actually later in the day? And then even though he has to go to church in the morning and miss the game, there's just no good answer for that, because he's just ready to cry as soon as I would tell him that you're going to miss basketball. But either way, I'm rushing out of here to do that. And we got another half an hour, though, before I do that. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We just talked about political statistics. Very simple. Let's sum it up. If a bad economy, you're going to lose the re-election. The incumbent loses. Right? You get a recession, you're not going to win re-election. You have a bad stock market. I don't know if this is causational or correlated. Maybe it's just the correlation here is that a bad economy usually means a bad stock market, and we know that a bad stock market is very predictive of, again, incumbents losing. So you need a good economy, you need a good stock market, and guess what? You get reelected. It's pretty simple. And despite the millions of articles that are going to be written about that between now and then, let's just remember, it just goes back to the economy. It goes back to what's happening when it comes to jobs. And it was interesting that earlier this week, President Trump, after saying that it looked like he basically said, look, I'm in no rush to do a deal with China, even though we're supposed to have a deal. So every day I'm doing an update for Scott Slade for Atlanta Morning News, mark it down a bunch. It's usually because the president of the White House is backing away from a trade deal. When the market does well, the president is saying, or Larry Kudlow is saying, hey, I think we're going to get something done. And that has just been continuing to move markets day after day after day. Friday was a little bit interesting, though, because we had an economic number that matters arguably more than anything. That's the jobs report. We added for the month of November, you get the first Friday of the month, so December, for jobs in November. The United States economy added 266,000 jobs, over a quarter of a million new jobs in a month. That's 100,000 more than most forecasts. Big number. And then revised the prior months higher by another 41,000 for the prior 2 months. So, I mean, this economy is adding massive jobs. Now, some of that's the kickback from the General Motors strike. There are 46,000 jobs that came back because of the General Motors strike ending. But here we are almost in 2020, and the unemployment rate in the United States of America is 3.5%. 3.5%. That's it's a half century low. Half century low. And if you look at who's participating in this economy, it's actually the jobless rate is at a, to be precise, a 53-year low. Okay. labor force participation in the prime working years, age 25 to 54, is at a 10-year high. So more people are coming off the bench getting into the labor market than have over the past decade. Average hourly earnings up at about 3% annual rate. So we also know that's another big indicator for presidential reelection is, do we see wage growth in America? If you've got flat wage growth or negative wage growth, i.e. people earning the same this year as they did last year, yet inflation is 3% higher or 2% higher, that's no good either. That doesn't win reelections either. However, and we know that the statistics around that are that you need to see, if you're a president, about 1.5% wage growth in order to have a good chance to win reelection. Right now, 3%. We're seeing wage growth at 3%. So that's just what's happening in the economy, right? This is not even a political conversation. It's just this is what's happening in the economy. The jobs report, even though it is last month, so it's not necessarily a forward-looking indicator, these are very recent numbers, though. Just happened, just November. No argument that this economy, for the vast majority of economic indicators, barring really manufacturing, which is running slightly in contraction territory, very, very solid economy, at least for now, which means that a recession is a long way off. Very difficult to even get close to recession when we have this many jobs getting created and wage growth growing up, headed higher. That's where we find ourselves today. And we're going to continue to talk about that, how it relates back to the election on Money Matters here on Sunday mornings. Now, let's talk about something a little bit more tactical. If you've been thinking, and this is just a problem, I think it's an interesting problem that, or financial crossroads we all face, which are always interesting questions. This is our version of Mark Arum on his show. And I did Clark Howard Christmas Kids on Thursday night with Mark Arum, Clark Howard, Eric Erickson. And Mark Arum had on one of his frequent guests, a CPA named Sanjay. And Sanjay always asks these questions like, would you rather do this or that? And they're always tough questions. I was excited about that because my own kids asked me those questions too. And this is Jake the other day, my 7-year-old asked me, Dad, would you rather have all the money in the world or be able to fly as in like a superhero? Like Superman fly, like just bullet fast. What would you rather? So if you have all the money in the world, great, you give your own jet, but you can't personally fly. If you have all the, if you're a superhero speed, you can get anywhere you want. And arguably, you're probably going to be able to have all the money in the world too if you wanted it, right? So which one would you get? I don't know. I think I do the fly one. I bring that up because this is the economic question. Actually, I'll tell you that we were Clark Howard Christmas Kids, and Arum's question was, or Sanjay's question was, would you rather take your income today and have it go up 10 times the income, but double your stress, or would you rather your income go up by only 20% and have half the stress, work less, half the stress? Tough question. Clark Howard said, similar income, less stress. Mark Arum's had similar income, less stress. I said, double the stress, 10 times the income. I don't know. It's because I like working. I think it's fun. So it's not stressful to me just because we have to work more. It's the dignity of work. We know that it is part of being a happy retiree. Remember the Harry's study we talked about a couple weeks ago? The dignity of work. It's something that actually leads to happiness, particularly for guys, for one reason or another. Anyway, let's talk about lump sum here. So here's my would you rather. Would you rather, and this is a real life situation, a single life annuity for the rest of your life, $5,000 a month, $5,000 a month, single life annuity. So if you take it today for the rest of your life, you pass away, it's gone. Or a joint life annuity covers you and your spouse for the rest of whoever lives longest, or a lump sum. And here are the numbers. Would you rather take a quote, remember, nothing's guaranteed in this world, but we'll call a pension a quote guarantee because even if the company goes away, you've got the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp, that comes and says, okay, we'll backstop this. So here are the numbers. And these numbers are actually a little even higher than PBGC. Depending on your age, the Pension Benefit Guaranty Corp will insure a 65-year-old their pension of about $67,000 a month or $67,000 a year. But if you're younger than that, the numbers are actually lower because you have a longer life expectancy. So just think about these numbers. $5,000 a month just covering your life, or $4,200 a month, so $800 less, but covering you and your spouse for whoever lives the longest. So you take a lower amount, but it's covering two lives. Or would you rather a lump sum of $1 million? You start to think, well, okay, let's go through the numbers here. $1 million or $5,000 a month forever. Or $4,200 for you, me, and my spouse forever as well. So the difference here, there are a couple of things to think about. First of all, if you've heard me talk about pensions before, I'm a big believer in the 6% test. I think that if you effectively take, if you forego the $1 million, you don't get your money back. Well, if you think about this, 20 years of payments of $5,000 is $1.2 million. So it takes a long time to even get payments of $1 million. But the 6% test is you take your monthly amount, 5,000 times 12, right, which is $60,000, divided by the lump sum is 6%. If you're getting a quote guaranteed 6% payment, no matter what the math is, 20, you could cut it in half, same thing, $2,500 a month times 12 is $30,000, or a lump sum of $500,000 divided by $500,000, 6%. Well, if that number is 7 or 8%, meaning that you're going to get $2,500 a month divided by a lump sum of only $150, now that's $2,500 a month times 12, which is $30,000 divided by a lump sum of $150, now that's a 20% a year pension. So you'd obviously you'd want to take the monthly amount because you'd quickly make your money back, and you could never guarantee yourself such a high percentage off of a lump sum. So if you think $30,000 or $200,000, right? $30,000 a year for life or $200,000 is a lump sum. Now you're talking about, if you do the pension versus lump sum test versus $30,000 divided by $200,000, now you're at 15%. You'd still rather take the monthly amount. Now you get to the point where you're getting $30,000 a year or $550,000. Now what happens? Now you're only at a 5% or 5.4% pension in monthly amounts. You'd much rather take the monthly, or you'd much rather take the lump sum and just create your own pension. And that's what we have to think about here when it comes to these decisions. The headlines this year, 100,000 folks from GE are faced with this. They're already getting a pension. Now GE is coming back to them and saying, hey, we're here, take this big chunk of money and no longer take your pension. Well, you've got to, in order to do that, in order to take the lump sum or stay, in order to stay with a monthly amount, the lump sum amount has got to be, it's got to pass the 6% test. And that test is pretty simple. You take your monthly amount, times it by, multiply by 12, divided by the lump sum. If it's above 6%, you consider keeping the monthly. If it's 6% or lower, take the money, roll into an IRA, and just create your own pension. We can take 5% from a lump sum of cash with no interest for 20 straight years. So if you're retiring at 60, a lump sum or a monthly pension amount that's only 5.5%, I mean, what are they doing? They're giving you back your money plus 0.5% in interest? That doesn't make any sense. Now, the wrinkle here, I think, and the reason I want to bring this up this month, there's so many other variables here. The wrinkle here is to do you, what can you cover yourself with a life insurance policy? Take the higher amount, single life amount, highest amount of my pension, and then cover your spouse by buying a life insurance policy. Now that's an interesting proposition. Let's talk about those numbers when we get back. So lump sum versus pension, cover it with a life insurance policy. Let's do those numbers. When Money Matters returns. More Money Matters right here at WSB Radio, straight ahead. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Let's go through this would you rather calculation when it comes to retirement versus lump sum versus really, can I take, and when we're faced with this, and you're saying, your company's saying you can take a really high amount, it's just based on your life for the rest of your life, versus a lower amount that covers you and your spouse, there's no, it's a tough question. And it relates back to, I've got to do the 6% test on what? The single life amount I'm going to get forever? Take that times 12, divided by my lump sum to pass the 6% test? Or do I take the joint number? And the reality here is you need to take the joint number. I did the math this week again on this. And this is a real life example. You take $5,000 a month or $4,200. $5,000 that just covers your life. So a lot of money, but it only covers you. If you die in 1 year, 5 year, 10 years, you don't get your, you would have been much better off just taking the lump sum. By the way, here, example, $1 million. But the joint life only is only $4,200. So what if you just say, that's $800 a month less. That's $9,600 a year. Couldn't I just get a life insurance policy? So take the higher amount and then insure the lump sum if something happens to me would get paid to my spouse by buying a life insurance policy, buy a $1 million life insurance policy. And the numbers actually do work out. You can get, I priced out a 20-year level term policy for a healthy 59-year-old. And it would range, it'd be about $4,500 a year all the way to $6,500. Let's call it, you could get a policy for $400 a month. So you take your $5,000 that you would have gotten minus the $400 it costs to insure the $1 million that you technically left on the table in case you die earlier than you expect. And you're at $4,600 a month, which is $400 better than the joint life equation that they were giving you. $4,200. So you're better off by $400 a month. So it, to some extent, it's a version. It's the best of both worlds. The problem is, that's the catch. What if you live longer than 20 years? What if you live longer than 20 years, which is what you're expecting to do? So I don't, bottom line on this, I think it's everyone that looks at one of these pension life equations versus joint, I just don't like the math. I don't think the math really works for most families. And I just, it's almost a wash in monthly income. 20 years is too short to run out of insurance, and the math doesn't work for me. So run your 6% test on the joint life number, not the single life number. You can watch a video on it on my YouTube channel. I just posted it this week. Should I take a lump sum or monthly pension payment? How to decide. The math's on there as well. And have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Stay tuned to the best program on the planet right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.